Hello, and you're very welcome to Adapt Radio. My name is Dr. Claire O'Connell, and today we're talking about AI, knowledge, and the future of trustworthy information.
From the Adapt Centre at Trinity College, this is Adapt Radio, presenting groundbreaking innovations one conversation at a time.
So we need people to be, you know, critically digitally literate. We need people to feel an agency towards information. We need them to be curious. We need them to not feel passive, like their agency is just taken away from them by technology. It's like, well, there's nothing I can do. And, you know, this is the knowledge that gives me. And this is what the recommender system says. So I almost like I have to accept it. It's like you're a ballroom dancing partner and you have to go where your partner pushes you. But it's not that way. And we need people to feel like they want something. They want a certain kind of world.
How is artificial intelligence reshaping how we access, trust, and interpret information from newsroom algorithms right through to knowledge infrastructures? What does this reshaping mean for democracy, for civic trust, and for the public's right to be informed? They are very big questions indeed. And to discuss them, I'm delighted to be joined by Eamon Kennedy and Professor Jennifer Edmund. Eamon is the Chief Innovation Officer at News Corp, and Jennifer is Professor in Digital Humanities at Trinity College Dublin. Eamon and Jennifer, you are both very welcome to the podcast.
Thanks, Claire.
So I suppose I always think it's getting harder and harder to see the big picture on our small devices. And part of that is because AI is generating so much content. It's recommending information. Everything is being tailored to us. How is that affecting our society? That's a huge question, but I'm very curious to know what you think of it.
Hard to know who should take this first. I mean, it's so great to be here with you, Eamon, and just because we come from such different perspectives onto the same question. So I'm really looking forward to hearing what you say. Okay, so I'll jump in. I'll bite. I think what I think is so interesting. So when I look at these kinds of technologies, I'm sort of looking at the big picture in the long term. And what I find so interesting is I kind of feel like we're going back, not going forward. Because if you think about it, there was a time when your information, your idea of the world would have been very limited. You would have talked to the other people in your village, and occasionally someone would come over the mountain and bring news. You know, the bard would come and he'd sing of the world events. And then gradually over time, we developed these sort of media that allowed us to see further and understand more. Once you get to the era of social media, it starts to break down because there's more information than you can actually absorb and you can't understand anymore. And I think we thought at the time that that was really exciting. You know, once this information started opening up, because it was breaking down the sort of the elitism of being informed. It wasn't just that, you know, the king had all the information. It wasn't just that people who were wealthy and could travel could have this perspective. All of a sudden, that was available to everyone. But as it became more and more, no one could process it. And what we see now is people are going back to wanting that one trusted voice. But the problem is that one trusted voice isn't an individual. Okay, so an individual can be biased and can be looking to build their own power and all of that. And there's all these problems with that. But we're not even looking at an individual. We're not even looking at an information source. We're looking at a statistical model of language that happens to have been trained from a lot of information. So it sometimes comes up with correct answers. It sometimes comes up with plausible answers that are really incorrect. So I think it's really interesting how we seem to have gone backwards, because we've gotten to the point where there's more information than we can actually deal with. So we want something that filters it, but the tool we're using to filter it isn't meant for that. What do you think, Eamon?
Yeah. What do you think, Eamon?
Well, first of all, thank you again for having me on. And I'm really glad that Jennifer took the first part of that question. I'd love to disagree, but I don't think I can. I mean, as a technologist, I don't know if I'd use the phrase we're going backwards. That'd be the only kind of thing I disagree with. I agree with everything you're saying there in terms of, from my perspective, it's such an important time for journalism, right? And I think that it adds so much more weight and so much more value to what journalism, but always at the heart of journalism, right, is that kind of the idea of, and as you were saying, informing your village, right, informing your community, having that trusted voice, being transparent, right? So when you bring information, explaining where you got that information from, displaying it, curating that information for the good of your community, for the good of democracy. And these are all kind of core principles of journalism. And in terms of, Are we kind of going backwards or forwards? I think we're starting to define a new era, and that's what I think is really exciting about now, is that there's this kind of talk of the coming wave. Right? I'm sure we've kind of seen that, these large declarations that are being made by the hyperscalers and other such companies. But I really think that journalism and I suppose just society has a hand in basically kind of sculpting what these waves are going to be like if we're smart about it, right? I think we're quite early. I think you are seeing that kind of pushback from the principle of that kind of compounding error rate of hallucinations within AI. And people are starting to come back to those trusted sources. And I think that's on, I suppose, media as a whole. I think that's on society, that's on democracy, that's on governments to create that, those trusted sources of information whereby people can really understand the world that's going around them and are informed to, I suppose, empower their own freedom to make decisions. So, yeah, I think it is kind of funny. I don't believe that there's an oracle of AI that we'll all of a sudden, you know, bow towards. And I think now is a really, really exciting time for journalism. It's one that I'm incredibly passionate about.
It is for sure. It's absolutely an exciting time of change. We've seen such rapid change between initially, you know, we had the internet and then social media and now AI all layered on top of it. And I suppose, I mean, you mentioned there, Jennifer, one of the things about AI was that you're thinking it's a tool to help you cut through the information. But in practice, and I know, Eamon, you're saying, you know, we need to take this considered view and go to trusted sources and everything. But in practice, we're overwhelmed with information and AI tends to give us kind of what we want from the global information. That's why I'm saying it can get harder to see that bigger picture on the small devices because it's being funneled to us by something, by a tool maybe that, as Jennifer says, is maybe not the right tool for the job. Do you think?
I don't know, Jennifer, if you want to go first.
No, Eamon, you take this one.
Yeah, I think the there's a few different philosophical takes on what is AI and how are people using it. Is it a tool? Will it be an agent within society? Is it a way of augmenting what we do? I think those questions are still to be answered. In terms of our ability to discern the glut of information that we have and the sheer unprecedented amount of access to information that we have, I think that is for society and for individuals especially, is it can be quite overwhelming.
Yeah.
And I kind of go back to that idea of trusted sources and the idea of creating products that will engage with community, with society, to help people curate that information for themselves, right? And to be that kind of hand that holds people through. And I think that's actually the biggest challenge, right? You know, I think in some ways you could look at, if you look at AI as a tool, right? It's amazing for so many different things. It might not just be the right thing from a informing society perspective. I'm not saying it can't. I think we're very early. I think there's ways that it can be used in journalism. There's ways that it can be augmented. It's a fantastic technology. I'm not a doomsayer in terms of AI, but I would agree. I think there is huge opportunities for other kind of service providers, for want of a better word, to come in and help people with that unprecedented problem. We have the information not only now at our fingertips, but we can access it in ways that we were never able to do that before. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it's a heavy burden.
Yeah.
Okay. Jennifer, did you have anything to add
to
that?
Yeah, I think one of the things that I think is really problematic in this space is that, like, we talk about AI like it's one thing. Mm-hmm. And actually, it's kind of no thing. It's a metaphor, really, artificial intelligence. I mean, intelligence is really hard to define. And then you're saying it's artificial. And it really isn't an intelligence. It's an artifice of intelligence. It looks like intelligence. It works some ways a little bit like a human intelligence. So, you know, two different examples, you know, we tend to see a lot of search engines that are now pushing forward an LLM-based search. So it's based on a large language model. So it's based on the statistical. And yes, there's a huge amount of the internet that is behind that. And very often there are credible and indeed sometimes even correct results. But when I think about AI, I also think about things like recommender systems. And that's really, okay, so maybe it doesn't make a difference, you know, what Netflix series you watch next. But does it? Because I have a PhD student now, Artur Azabok, who's just finishing his work on how recommender systems actually, if you look at how they work and how they're trained, and the way in which they will move a brand new account, so a kind of a, you know, this is the cold start problem, an account that doesn't know anything about the person it's recommending to, you'll see how very quickly it moves towards polarization in political contexts. And that really starts to make you think, okay, well, if we are overwhelmed, and so we choose a tool that may not be the right tool because there are so many tools, and some of them are really good for certain things, and some of them, you know, like I have a lot of students who will use ChatGPT for everything, and I always tell them, ChatGPT is probably the worst tool for anything you use it for, just because it does everything. Sorry, are we not allowed to mention particular
tools? No, it's fine. I'm just laughing at how honest you are about it. It's great. So, Eamon, as someone who sort of lives and works in the world of journalism, can I ask you how AI is changing that world in terms of how you tell stories and how consumers consume news? What difference is AI making now?
Yeah, I mean, it's a huge question, right? And I think we're also at the beginning of a lot of changes, right, in terms of we don't quite know where things will go yet. But I think primarily what I'm very interested in and see a lot of value in it is that AI companies are coming to journalism companies, to media companies for that trusted content, right? I think that's a big part of how we're interacting with AI, because obviously these kind of LLM, these training models, you know, the better information that they're trained on, their ability to give you an answer with a trusted source then that you can verify and validate for yourself. I think that's a huge opportunity, right? I think also we're getting an understanding within the industry that there is a value there, right? That needs to be paid for. That's a commercial exchange that needs to happen. That's something that we believe very, very strongly. And then in terms of AI as a kind of a tool for I suppose, the newsrooms, for journalism, there are ways that it can augment processes, right? However, I believe that journalism, veracity, verification, communication, how stories are told, how you engage with your communities, you know, that should be a person first, right? There should always be a human involved in that. So I wouldn't believe that we can replace humans with AI from a journalism perspective, but there are lots of ways that it can augment and it can help run the newsrooms, it can help research, you know, create models to tell better stories. But ultimately, it should be a tool that you use to help inform your community, your readers, people that are trusting you to get the truth, to understand what's happening in the world around them.
And that's an important word, trust, isn't it? Because it's hard to win and you can lose it in a heartbeat. So in terms of how to develop that trust in sources, because people, you know, I mean, one would hope that people would have an interest in the provenance of news and, you know, where is this coming from? Is it coming from an organization that aligns with my values? Do I trust it, et cetera, et cetera? How do you build trust in a world of AI where a lot of content is essentially not trustworthy?
I mean, I can jump into that, and Jennifer, you can have an opinion, I have taken it as well. But I think that's core, right? I think that's huge, and I think that's the way that again, that's things that excite me, is that how media companies can garner that trust, right? So obviously, most media companies will have a community of people that trust them already, but you need to continue to cultivate that trust. You really need to explain the provenance of the information that you're getting, be transparent about where you got that information, give more data points to back up your research, right? So you're bringing people on a journey. And I think that is how you keep the trust, right? Then I think a big challenge, and I think a really big opportunity, is, you know, people who are going on to, you know, insert your favorite GPT interface assistant here and not getting the information that they want, or not finding that they're getting trustworthy information. There is that time where people will go to a source, right? And they'll start to look at a variety of sources, and how can media companies start to build that trust at that entry level, I think is really, really important. And I think it's a huge opportunity. And do you use AI and a tooling for that? You know, can you that that first person problem, that how can you recommend things? How can you be transparent about where you're using AI, where you're using technology? And how can you give people and deliver that information and inform them and empower them in a way that they feel they're going to come back again to try to get the answer to that question that they have, or to feel informed, or you know, to get out of that malaise of often AI generated slop that's out there, or whispers or rumors, and go to those trusted sources. So trust, I think, is massive. And I think in a world where we're starting to now get to a point where a lot of AI generated images and videos are at the point that they're to naked eye, they're indistinguishable, right? That's a huge challenge, right? That means a primary source that we've been using for years is no longer potentially a primary source. So people are going to start to navigate and to reach out to sources that they trust, that have earned that trust, and that have built up that trust and are cultivated and are careful with it. So yeah, I think it's massive, and it's only going to become more and more important with the kind of onset of this AI slap, for want of a better word.
Of trust in an organization. Yeah. Jennifer, what are your thoughts on that?
I mean, I think I would absolutely, you know, agree with everything that Eamon has just said. And it's in some ways so refreshing to kind of talk to you. I mean, because a lot of times when I spend, you know, when I'm talking to, I spend a lot of time working like with EU policy circles, and there's a lot of, you know, the idea of trustworthy AI. And to me, you know, AI, to the extent that we can kind of talk it, you know, as a suite of approaches, an AI tool is just a tool. Now, you know, there's lots of tools that I use. I don't talk about trusting my pen. I think it'll either work or it won't work. I don't talk about trusting my toaster. It's going to work or it's not going to work. So why would I talk about trusting AI? So all of a sudden, you know, at that point, we're sort of giving away the fact that there is this slipperiness, that we're sort of, that there's this opacity in this black box, and we're not going there, but we need to, because if we're going to have the right tool for the right purpose, which we should always do, you know, we don't use a hammer to take a screw out. So why would we use a particular, you know, a particular AI generated approach to do something that it may not be developed or well suited for? So, but I think that the tools there are just the tip of the iceberg, because then below that you have absolutely this layer of trust. And, you know, we can get in what you do trust is, we trust institutions, we trust individuals, we trust companies, we trust, you know, we can actually talk about trustworthy information, because that information comes from somewhere. And we're not talking about the information itself. We're talking about where the information comes from, how it's been assimilated, how it's been created. So beneath that layer of the tools, we have the layer of the trust. And that is very much a human layer. But I think below that, we also have this layer of what we need and want people to be like, the attitude people need to have towards their own information. I have teenagers and they laugh because I always say, you must be vigilant about your knowledge. But there is this kind of sense of, if we just accept it passively, we become very vulnerable towards certain kinds of abuse. There's certain fragilities that come into society that way. So we need people to be, you know, critically digitally literate. We need people to feel an agency towards information. We need them to be curious. We need them to not feel passive. And this is the thing that, again, that tip of the iceberg, I think, is most worrying me about, because I do see, like, a lot of my master's students will feel very like their agency is just taken away from them by technology. It's like, well, there's nothing I can do. And, you know, this is the knowledge that gives me, and this is what the recommender system says. So I almost, like, I have to accept it. It's like you're a ballroom dancing partner and you have to go where your partner pushes you. But it's not that way. And we need people to feel like they want something. They want a certain kind of world. And I worry about how sometimes the information environment we live in sort of seems to take that away. It erodes that, because people feel like, well, there's no way of knowing. But there are ways. And that's where we kind of need to sort of build that stack of, you know, from competencies through trust up to the tools. And if we can do that, then we'll find ourselves in a much better place.
I 100% agree. I think as well, just to slightly put another layer on top of that, I think we're only starting to develop heuristics and language, right? That to really understand what's going on, right? So, like, new models, new technologies are coming out the whole time, and then people are using terms like trustworthy AI, like AGI, like ASI, and we don't necessarily have a common understanding for what these terms mean. So I think that's it. That's another huge challenge and opportunity. And I'm not a Luddite, I'm a technologist, right? So I'm a computer scientist. And, like, I believe technology is an enabler, right? And I feel very optimistic in terms of where technology is going. I think there's huge opportunities to leverage these emerging technologies, whether it's AI, whether it's AR and VR. And, you know, I think it can make a hugely positive change to society. But there are some things whereby we do start to need to have common understanding of words to apply to certain ideas, right? And again, when you think of AI, people talk about AI generated videos or AI slop. There's a huge amount of subsets and sub elements to what we're talking about. And often the devil is in the details of these things. That is an education piece, not just for people within our industry, but also for society and culture in general.
And building that literacy, I suppose, and agency in society is so important. Jennifer, maybe you could talk to us a little bit about the KT4D project. Can you tell us about that? Because that's something that Dublin is very much a part of, and you've had events where you have sort of talked to people about how they feel about how AI and big data are affecting things like democracy. And talk us through that.
This was a project that we proposed to the European Commission for funding probably about 5 years ago now. So the world has changed a lot, but not all that much at the same time. And I think they were interested in our approach to the intersection between AI and big data and democracy for a lot of reasons. We're distinctive among the projects that were funded in this space because we're really looking at culture and sort of taking a humanities rather than a social sciences approach to the problem. But essentially what we're doing is we're looking at three different kind of forms of actor in the space and three different modes of intervention. So the three actors are technology developers, policy developers and policymakers, and then citizens. And you'll kind of see responsibility pushed around between these three poles a lot. You know, it's like, well, if the technology builders just built better technology, then we wouldn't have these problems. Well, if the people who were using, the users just understood what they were doing, if they just read the terms and conditions, then that we wouldn't have to vote. Well, we just need the regulators to do things right. And of course, this is a complex ecosystem and no one party can actually change things and make democracy safe, as it were, from the kinds of things, you know, not what technology does, because technology is neither good nor bad, nor is it neutral, but it can be used for really, really incredibly good things, or it can be used for really rather bad things. So we take these three positions and we looked at, okay, so how can we educate, regulate, and innovate better? And we figured these are the three things we need to do. So we've had a number of interactions and, you know, we chose different places to be the locations where we'd look at these. So, for instance, obviously, Brussels is where we're looking mostly at regulation. And then we have parallel experiences in Warsaw and Madrid, where we're looking at that education piece. And it's interesting to see how different Warsaw and Madrid are, because very, very different cultures, different languages, and very, very different attitudes towards technology and towards power and towards authorities and institutions. So that's been hugely interesting. And then Dublin has been the home of our use case looking at technology developers. And we've been looking at this whole question of kind of AI ethics, which is really, it's complicated because you can't just bolt it on at the end. And the technology developers we've talked to have all been really very ethically minded. You know, they want to do the right thing. They don't always think it's their job. They don't always know where in the company that comes from. They don't always, and they do often sometimes, you know, say, well, it's for the regulators or for the users or for someone else to do. But they also don't necessarily have access to the kinds of cultural perspectives that they would need. So that's been, you know, a fascinating journey. And actually, it's interesting. Originally, we thought that for this group, we would build a kind of a, you know, an ethics toolkit where they'd have checkboxes. And they said, oh, God, no, not more checkboxes. And there's lots of those out there. And people tend not to know them or use them. So what we ended up doing in the end was building an interactive digital narrative, allowing them to explore a fictional case, but based on reality of technology breaking down for a community and saying, okay, well, where do you think that breakdown was and what aspects of the breakdown can be attributed to the users, to the regulation, to the cultural situation, to the technology design, to the data management? And it's really useful for them to be able to work through that because they love the problem solving aspect of it. And they come away with it with more of an awareness of the way in which culture and technology can come together to either enhance or diminish democracy.
You had a very public interaction at the Beta Festival, I think it was, in 2024, where you invited people to come in and sort of learn more about this and give their own opinions. What came out of that?
Yeah, so that was our Digital Democracy Lab. That was our broken platform. And I say broken platform, and it sounds negative, but it's actually super positive, because what we did was we took, you know, there's a lot of these platforms out there that are intended to create spaces for democratic debate. And in some cases, they're using AI to filter the debate, and sometimes they're using AI to demonstrate positions. But they have a tendency to, you know, the user puts information in and then they get a position out. And it misses that opportunity for collective sense making. But it also misses that opportunity for critical digital literacy, for understanding, like, what happened to my opinion when I put it in there? Like, who else is here? So the Digital Democracy Lab is, first of all, it's a technology system that is not meant to be used without people. It's meant to be facilitated. It has a whole handbook and set of facilitation guides. And depending on who the audience is, it gets tuned slightly differently. Second thing about it is it has a lot of friction. We always say, oh, you know, we want technology systems to be frictionless. We want technology systems to be full of friction, because we want people to feel those moments when maybe it's moving out of alignment with what they value. And, you know, we value different things at different times. If we're at the grocery store, we may value, you know, a good price on avocados. If we are, you know, with our family, we may value, you know, high quality education for our kids. These things can come into tension, and we don't remember all the time that we have all of these positions. So if we're faced with a certain kind of proposition, we may decide with a certain hat on. So we were constantly bringing people back to the question of, okay, so this is what's happening in this part of the system. What do you think about, you know, these are the profiles. Do you agree with how you've been profiled? Do you agree with the data that has been used for that? This is how the system's been trained. Well, do you agree with that data set? Is it big enough? Is it diverse enough? So we were really, and in Dublin, again, because we're looking at software developers in the Dublin use case, we were able to really take this question of how much friction is good in an AI system? How much transparency do we need? How accurately can we portray the AI metabolism? And, you know, what can we expect of users? Because I think there is a sense that users just don't want to see the details. But if users need to see the details, we need to find ways of making those details comprehensible. So it was great to do that in coordination with Beta Festival, because obviously that made it an event that we could really get people in to understand that this was a space to think and a space to experience, a space to learn about what you want from these platforms, rather than try out a new platform and maybe buy it or maybe not.
Brilliant. I suppose, Eamon, you know, listening to Jennifer talk about that rich piece of research, you know, how important is it for media organizations to be partnering with people who are doing research in this space about AI, trustworthiness, democracy, etc.?
Absolutely. I think it's vitally important that, I mean, not just media companies, but everyone really is partnering up with researchers, and people should have a sense. I think you mentioned before, Jennifer, that we do have agency in this, right? It's not that aliens have come from outer space and just dropped in a new technology that we all have to use. I think, as I said previously, we need to start really defining what we mean by certain terms, looking at heuristics in terms of what is good or bad. I think it sounds fascinating in terms of what you folks were doing. And I think it's important that we all start to engage a little bit, and also to recognize that we are able to. We're not at a stage where we've been born into a world where AI is controlling everything, right? We're at a very, very early stage. And it's important that we share our learning and even the idea of kind of what does open source look like when it becomes in an AI perspective. How can we facilitate that understanding, you said, and that ability to engage when needed, but not necessarily all the time, right? And I think it's vitally important that we're sharing what we learn, both in terms of within kind of the different industries, but also inherently within academia, and encouraging students to think these big, deep thoughts and to try experiments. And media companies need to experiment as well. And it's vitally important that, yeah, the future is not yet defined, right? I think sometimes when you hear the large companies saying, oh, in 2 years' time, this is going to happen, in 3 years' time, this is going to happen. We don't know yet, but it's important that we kind of outline what we deem to be important, what we think the opportunities are, and look for research pathways towards those, to iterate quickly. We need to iterate at the same speed, unfortunately, because the change is happening so fast. But yeah, sorry, that was a little bit of a longer answer, I think, than I planned, but I think it's important.
No, it's fantastic. Fantastic. That is just fascinating. And what a perfect way to round off this discussion, which is we've touched on such huge issues here. And huge thanks to Eamon Kennedy and Professor Jennifer Edmund for joining us today on the podcast. And if you would like to find out more about how ADAPT is working in this area, please do check out www.adaptcentre.ie. For now, though, from me, Claire O'Connell, slán, and thanks for listening.
The ADAPT Radio podcast is brought to you by the ADAPT Centre at Trinity College Dublin. Find out more about their extensive research work at adaptcentre.ie. Join us next time to hear about more groundbreaking innovations. To get new episodes automatically, just click the follow button on your player right now. The ADAPT Radio podcast is produced by dustpod.io, with episodes monthly on Apple, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.